ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो सिक्स चैप्टर फोर टेक्स्ट नंबर 50, 49 and 50. दिस चैप्टर इज एंटाइटल्ड एज द हंस गुह्य प्रेयर्स. स वै यदा सवयदा महादेवो मम वीर्योपबृंहितः मेनेखिलम् इवात्माना उद्यतः स्वर्गकर्मणि. सवयदा महादेवो मम वीर्योपबृंहितः मेनेखिलम् इवात्माना उद्यतः स्वर्गकर्मणि. सवयदा महादेवो मम वीर्योपबृंहितः मेनेखिलम् इवात्माना उद्यतः स्वर्गकर्मणि. उद्यतस्वर्गकर्मणि सवयदा महादेवो मम उद्योपबृंहितः. ट्रांसलेशन एंड पर्पोर्ट बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद. व्हेन द चीफ लॉर्ड ऑफ द यूनिवर्स लॉर्ड ब्रह्मा स्वयंभू, having been inspired by my energy, was attempting to create, he thought himself incapable. Therefore, I gave him advice, and in accordance with my instructions, he underwent extremely difficult austerities. Because of these austerities, the great Lord Brahma was able to create 9 personalities, including you, to help him in the functions of the creation. Purport. Nothing is possible without tapasya. Lord Brahma, however, was empowered to create this entire universe because of his austerities. The more we engage in austerities, the more we become powerful by the grace of the Lord. Therefore, Rishabhdev advised his sons, Tapo divyam putraka ena sattvam shuddhayed. One should engage in penance and austerity to attain the divine position of devotional service. By such activity, one's heart is purified. In our material existence, we are impure, and therefore we cannot do anything wonderful. But if we purify our existence by tapasya, we can do wonderful things by the grace of the Lord. Therefore, tapasya is very important, as stressed in this verse. Om. And the chief lord of the universe, Lord Brahma, Swayambhu, having been inspired by my energy, was attempting to create. He thought himself incapable. Therefore, I gave him advice, and in accordance with my instructions, he underwent extremely difficult austerities. Because of these austerities, the great Lord Brahma was able to create 9 personalities, including you, to help him in the functions of creation. Hare Krishna. So today is a very auspicious day for many of us. According to the Tithi, is the appearance of His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj. So here, very important point is made by Lord Vishnu before awarding the benediction to Daksha Prajapati. Daksha Prajapati performed the tapasya with the sole purpose, even though apparently it was meant for some responsible service, but all the acharyas, Srila Prabhupada, they make it very clear the purpose of sense gratification. Daksha had unlimited capacity to enjoy the gross sensual activities, and some other that turned to be devotional service for him. But the more important point is, even to engage in sense gratification, one has to perform tapasya. What to speak of performing devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead? And therefore we see the theme of the Vedic literature, including Srimad Bhagavatam. In the 9th canto, Sukadeva Goswami narrates the pastime of King Pururava. King Pururava, he was the ancestors of the Pandavas, great ancestors of the Pandavas. And Pururava became really famous because of his powerful kingship. And because of his power, he attracted the attention of the damsel of heavenly planets, the most favorite of Lord Indra. And she came out of the austerities of Lord Narayan, from the thighs of Lord Narayan. And Lord Narayan had given her as a gift to Lord Indra. And even she became so attracted by King Pururava, who was an earthly king. The demigod, inhabitants of the demigods, they are not satisfied or not, they are not attracted. Nothing is there in this world which attracts their consciousness. Because the sense gratification in those parts of the worlds are unlimited. But still, the power of Pururava was so great. She came down looking for having association with Pururava. And Pururava had association with her. And eventually, because of some terms and conditions and Indra feeling separation from Urvashi, some other Indra took her away back to the heavenly planets. And King Pururava, as if the soul from the body was left, he became like a dead person. In his mind, in his intelligence, in his bodily activities, he became dull. And then he performed tapasya to please Lord Vishnu. And then Lord Vishnu appeared, and Lord Vishnu satisfied Pururava by giving him back Urvashi. And that's the story ends. The story is over in the 9th canto. And then in 2 cantos, 10th and 11th, the story does not come. One wonders how, after engaging in austerities, after engaging, going mad after Urvashi, performing tapasya to Lord Vishnu, and not getting enlightened after that tapasya, he didn't pray to Lord Vishnu just like Dhruva Maharaj prayed. Sthanabhi tapasi sthitoham, that I was performing tapasya for a broken piece of glasses, but now I got the rare jewel. Same thing happened with Pururava. Lord Vishnu came, but still he said, I want Urvashi. He made it very clear. And the Bhagavatam stops the story there. And I remember many years back, Radhananda Maharaj was giving this class. And he said, because in those time, the Bhagavatam was coming canto by canto. What to speak of canto by canto, chapter by chapter. You know, devotees would get one chapter, they would read it. And after a few days, the next chapter would come. So that was creating great excitement for them. Now here the 9th canto has come. And they read the story of Pururava. And Pururava, you know, the happy end, he meets Urvashi, and that's over with Bhagavatam. And then the 11th canto took many years to come out. Many, many years. Prabhupada completed 9th canto in 76. 77, 78, 79, 80, 81. I think in 82, this 11th canto came. So Maharaj was mentioning, we are quite intrigued. It remained as a ghost within their consciousness. Why? Why this story is there where Pururava enjoys sense gratification? But when the 11th canto came in their hands, they feel completely satisfied. Why? Because that enjoyment ultimately gave enlightenment. Not because of the enjoyment, rather because of that enjoyment, Pururava suffered immensely. And then he compiled his Aila Gita, Where is beautiful, very powerful Ayala Gita? He is blasting material sense gratification. So just see that sense gratification is allowed, but the nature of sense gratification, even which is received in an authorized way, offered by Krishna for his own devotional service, the nature of sense gratification is that it has to create some kind of wrong results. And fortunately for Daksha, we have very clear story in the same chapter itself. Or the acharyas are reminding. Now, Daksha Prajapati prayed to Lord Vishnu. He got his sense gratification, and Prabhupada reminds in the next purport itself that just see, even though after getting that sense gratification, Daksha Prajapati did not learn his previous lesson. What was the previous lesson? Previous lesson was Daksha Prajapati had offended Lord Shiva. And then he got the head of a goat. And then he had to give up that body. He came back. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, Daksha came back with the same consciousness. And then he prayed to Lord Vishnu. He got his sense gratification. And he thought sense gratification is all in all. This is dharma. This is everything. And when sense gratification is practiced, or when austerity is practiced to make sense gratification as an end, it either creates great trouble or it creates offenses to others. That is the nature of sense gratification. The principle of sense gratification makes one's senses dull, the mind, intelligence, except one sense, the sense of false ego. The false ego becomes very activated. It becomes very powerful. All other senses, they become numb and dull. But the sense of false ego becomes very powerful and very active. Aggressively active. And therefore, when Narad Muni was enlightening Daksha Prajapati's sons, Daksha Prajapati sent them to perform tapasya. Tapasya is not bad, but what is the intention of tapasya? In the Mahabharata, it is explained, tapasya, giving charity, reading of the Shastra, and earning money. This is one of the first verses of the Mahabharata. Vyasadeva is explaining, he said they are very good. One should do it. But the problem is, what is the intention of these austerities, this charity, and this study of the Shastra? If the goal is wrong, then they are very dangerous. So Narad Muni did not stop their tapasya. Rather, he changed their intention for tapasya. He said, don't do tapasya just like your father did for sense gratification. Because that will lead to what? That will lead to frustration. That will lead to wrong kind of understanding and offenses to others. And he changed their intentions and they accepted the words of Narad Muni, continued to perform tapasya, but they attained perfection of life. That is the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then what was the result? The result was Daksha Prajapati did not come to Narad Muni, did not offer him garland. He did not praise Narad Muni, very good Narad Muni, I could not do this, at least you did it. But Narad Muni was condemned by Daksha Prajapati. He said, you think you are a sadhu, but you are not a sadhu. Your speeches are not sadhu, they are asadhu. You are inexperienced. You have sent my children who are inexperienced about life to perform certain activity which is not supposed to be done now. And used all kinds of abusive words to Narad Muni. And Narad Muni simply heard them without being disturbed. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada explains that the austerity has three kinds. The austerity does not stop at the level of the body. Our understanding of tapasya is, the tapasya means that fasting, chaturmas, you know, strictly taking the tapasya of chaturmas, or performing the nirjal vrat, or minimizing our eating habits, or minimizing our sleeping. At one point of time, in the same place, at our ashram, we had some devotees, and that was the, you know, culture was trying to spread around, that if you feel hungry, then you should not eat. If you are really hungry, that means that is the time you should avoid eating. And if you are sleepy, if you feel sleepy, when the required sleep is, you know, desirable for the body in the night time, go to sleep at 9 o'clock, but no, wait till 11 o'clock. Don't sleep, but get up in the morning. So our concept of tapasya is the tapasya only on the bodily platform. And this tapasya can be performed by the demons and equally non-devotees also. The devotees can perform this tapasya and non-devotees and the demons can also perform tapasya. Hiranyakashipu and Ravan, in bodily austerities, nobody could beat them. Never. Not possible. Just imagine standing on a toe for thousands of years, raising his hands, not in the Hari Kirtan, but looking for Lord Brahma to provide him unlimited material facilities, and nobody could beat him. In fact, the whole body of Hiranyakashipu was eaten by the worms. And the ants built the ant hill. And when Lord Brahma came to look for Hiranyakashipu, what did he see? He did not see Hiranyakashipu. Rather, he simply saw ant hill. And only after sprinkling the water from his kamandalu, Hiranyakashipu got back his body. So therefore, the bodily austerity is recommended. But the problem is even the demons do that. And Prabhupada writes in the purport in the Bhagavad Gita that some political leaders for political end, they perform these austerities. And what is the goal? Greater sense gratification. Jayadvaita Maharaj gave an example. He said, he told the parents, he said, many times we see children, they said, I will not eat because I want bicycle. And they can stay without eating for full day. No problem. But what is the goal? The goal is some toys, some bicycle, some sense gratification. And when the father is pleased, tatastu, I am pleased with his tapasya, then he has to offer whatever the son is desiring or a daughter is desiring. So this bodily tapasya is important, but not so important as the tapasya of the mind and the tapasya of the tongue. Shruta Kirti Prabhu, when he came few days back, he very beautifully explained this point. And in fact, many devotees said he is one of the best devotees to speak about Srila Prabhupada. And why it is so best? Because when he speaks about Prabhupada, when he speaks the glories of Srila Prabhupada, he never, very consciously, he never criticizes anybody. To glorify someone, you know, it is our mundane concept. The dual word says that if you condemn somebody and compare that condemnation with another person of his good qualities or his good qualities has to be glorified, they come to the forefront by condemning somebody else. But it is not very tasteful for an advanced devotee. Those who are taking pleasure in criticism may like this kind of glorification. Pure devotee is not glorified compared to others, other non-devotees or materialistic people or other unbona fide sadhus. A pure devotee is glorified because he is accepted by Krishna. He is self-effulgent. He is glorified because of his own activities, not compared to others. We are not good because others are bad. That is the mundane concept. So therefore, when the austerity of the tongue is not simply to avoid eating food cooked, you know, other than devotees, even that is so difficult for us. We some other, you know, make kind of adjustment. You know, I can go to a very best vegetarian restaurant and it is so nice from outside and we can contemplate and meditate and offer everything what is there in the kitchen. It becomes prasad. Then we can eat. Sharira, vidya, jal, jadendriya, tahaykal. Chant the prasad of the Lord. Even that is so difficult for us. To control the senses, the tongue, for eating only Krishna prasad. Some or other we eat outside food. Like Radha Gopinath was explaining 2 days back in our CSV meeting in the farm. He said when he was at his place, living in his house, because devotional service was fresh and you accepted everything in toto, he said anything was given to him, he was very conscious. Is it offered? Really the offering is done in a right way? Then partake that prasad. He was actually honoring prasad. But he said after you come to the temple, then what does it do? It creates familiarity, breeds contempt. Then you assume, must be offered. Rather than, you know, saying, okay, it is offered or not, we assume, must be offered. Why? Because the tongue is actively running, you know, like a super express highway, Bombay Pune express highway, desiring for eating. That is the nature of the tongue. Now, this is very gross. And Shruta Kirti Prabhu was explaining, he said, now because I am old, even if you give me best prasad, I can't eat. Eventually, material body forces us to perform this tapasya of not eating tasty food. That is, as much as we enjoy now, hoping that this is the only time, so I can gulp as much as possible, that fast, the body says, now you stop eating. Otherwise, you'll die. Just like Shaman was giving example of these European kings. They were so restless and so uncontrolled in their senses, they would have feast almost 10 to 12 times a day. Now you can't handle that. One meal, it is so much than you desire only khichdi. You become detached from food. But they are so attached to eating tasteful food, they would eat and then take laxatives. And then vomit it out and then, you know, bring it out from the form of the stool and go for the next meal. How long the body can handle that? The body cannot handle that. It is very difficult for the body to handle that. So then the Shastra says, okay, for the devotees, one has to control the senses about eating also. But greater than that, the tongue has to be utilized for glorifying the devotees and Krishna. Worst kind of uncontrolled tongue is not eating. That is there. That is our problem. We can't go beyond that. And what to speak of glorifying devotees? The tongue has two functions other than eating. One is to blaspheme and another is to flatter. And flattery is nothing but blasphemy. There is nothing in the heart when we talk good about others, but simply because we have some material intention, material, you know, some agenda, therefore the tongue vibrates flattery. But there is nothing, there is no feeling in the heart. And that flattery, what does it do, that flattery? That flattery actually, unfortunately, the person is flattered. We usually flatter those people who are, again, materialistically, you know, advanced, materialistically civilized. We flatter them. And then we increase their false ego and we increase our cheating propensity. And immediately the tongue, because the tongue is called as, in the second canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, tongue is compared to prostitute. And what is the nature of a prostitute? One of the main character of a prostitute is no loyalty. There is no loyalty, there is no chastity. So that is the nature of the tongue. The tongue cannot maintain the chastity. I have flattered him now. I have glorified him now. So I should not criticize. Immediately, the tongue starts blaspheming the same person whom we glorified. Again, yesterday somebody was mentioning in the meeting. He said, you see, when people are speaking on the mobile phone in the train and the boss calls them, what are you doing? Very nicely they said, sir, sir, I'm busy, sir, I'm doing this, sir. And every time they will say, sir. And after the talk is over, gada kaika, you know, immediately give a bad word. So that is flattery. And immediately, the immediate response of a flattery is a blasphemy. And on the other hand, the other party, one who is hearing the flattery, he becomes blinded by that glorification. So that is the nature of this prostitute tongue, asati. So therefore, the austerity of the tongue is what? Not simply avoiding foodstuffs, but rather consciously trying to appreciate devotees and Krishna. Even the Satam Shastra, the Bhagavatam, which only talks about the glorification of Krishna and his devotees, some other tongue has to bring out the technicalities. How this is not chronological, how this is not systematic. Some other, the mind and our senses, they lead us to, you know, trying to find some faults in the Shastra. Bhagavatam does not worry about the technicality details. Bhagavat's main intention is to glorify Krishna, to present how one has to take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Either Sukadeva Goswami or Suta Goswami or Vyasadeva, when they are writing Bhagavatam, they do not give much importance to, Sanatana Goswami explains this, in regards to chronology. They want to bring out the point of how Krishna always protects his devotees. Like Bhurijan Prabhu very beautifully explained how Krishna is introduced in the Bhagavatam. Krishna is introduced in the Bhagavatam actively, not somebody else is glorifying. Krishna himself is coming. How does he introduce in Bhagavatam? Krishna is introduced in the Bhagavatam as the protector of his devotees. Intensely trying to protect his devotees. That is how Bhagavatam introduces Krishna. But even in that story, some technicality will come. When did Drona's son send the Brahmastra? Was it the second Brahmastra? Was it the first Brahmastra? When he was cursed by Krishna and Arjuna that you'll become powerless. Arjuna took away his jewel and he was made to curse that you stink, all your body will stink. But then again the Brahmastra was released. So how is that the powerless Drona's son can release a second Brahmastra? But that is not the context of the Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam wants to present Krishna protecting his devotees, not to discuss on either it was the first Brahmastra or second Brahmastra. But still the mind is so nasty, even in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it can find faults. Therefore the austerity of the tongue is not to, you know, fast for month together. People have the power to fast, complete for 1 month, 40 days fast. And it is glorified. But the same people, unfortunately, while fasting for 40 days, they say that Krishna has gone to hell. So they will be taken into Vaitarana river, where they have to, you know, break their fast by, we don't want to discuss that, what they have to go through. You can read the Bhagavatam 5th canto. So the fasting is there, but the tongue is consciously utilized to blaspheme the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, when the tongue is utilized to glorify Krishna and his devotees consciously, then that is the austerity of the tongue. Same thing, the austerity of the mind. The mind has the power to absorb. That is not the problem with the mind. The mind has the power to absorb. If we don't absorb in the feet of Krishna, the mind can absorb in something. I like this example. He said, just like when we were young, or those young children, or many brahmacharis before they joined the temple, you know, they were sports people, sportsmen. They could stand in the hot sun in Delhi or Kanpur and take tennis full day. It was no problem. Nothing would happen to them. This is Shikshastang Prabhu's story. He was a tennis player. Or some other devotees would play cricket full day, no problem. No eating, no drinking. But when we go to the farm, because we don't know farming, or there is no taste for farming, you know, immediately within 5 minutes, the scorching sun creates such a trouble. Oh, it is too much. I can't handle this. My body is not made for this. No, your body, your mind is not made for it. If the mind is absorbed in something, it doesn't matter. We can stand hours together in line for buying a cinema ticket. But for Tirupati's darshan, we want immediate darshan. Huh? Why? Because the mind is not willing to accept that austerity. So therefore, the trouble of the mind is to commit, again, to find faults. And the trouble of the tongue is to flatter and blaspheme and then eat voraciously. So therefore, Hiranyakashipu and Ravan, just see, I think Gaur Gopal Prabhu mentioned yesterday, this is India, the land of Lord Ram. We talk about Ram Raj. And all these glittering posters are around all over Bombay. And what does it do? It is blaspheming Lord Ram. It says, Abhiman kisi na dekha. Abhiman sabne dekha, gyan na dekha. Shakti sabne dekha, bhakti na dekha. Now what is bhakti in Ravan? What bhakti he had? And very big posters. And just see, you know, such a, that is the bad, that is the unfortunate situation of India. Somebody was saying in Lanka during Dasera, because it is Lanka, we can expect that. They burn the effigy of, you know, they try to burn the effigy of Lord Ram. Of course, how can they burn Lord Ram? Lord Ram can consume fire. But that is Lanka, naturally it is expected. But Lanka is not in Lanka, Lanka is right in Bombay. Where they are trying to glorify Ravan. What bhakti, what gyan he had? Again, the wrong intention. Therefore, the whole Vedic literature talks about what is your intention. Why you want to do what you want to do. It is not that what you are doing has to be all good. In the Mahabharata, it is explained that every act or every object has some good and some bad. It is not that absolutely it is all right. Even while engaging in devotional service, therefore Prabhupada explains, one should perform devotional service in Krishna consciousness. What is the difference between devotional service and Krishna consciousness? But there is a big difference. One may perform the superficial activities of, you know, the 64 items of devotional service, but the consciousness is not to please Krishna, but the consciousness is to please one's own false ego, then that devotional service is in the mode of ignorance. It does not satisfy Krishna. And even if someone engages in the so-called devotional activities, even take for example preaching, it is the most compassionate activities. But even if there is a wrong understanding, wrong consciousness, preaching is done for one's own false prestige and false ego, that will not give desired result. As many number of people you preach, and if we continue that tendency, what does it do? It simply increases our false ego. And that's very detrimental to our spiritual life. Therefore, the Vedic literature, they are so conscious of awarding this knowledge, awarding the facilities to perform tapasya. Because if they are doing it for wrong intentions, then we see sometime Indra and other demigods, they stop their tapasya. Even the Lord stopped their tapasya. But if there is a right intentions, now all the facilities are created. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada, he said, what is the greatest tapasya? The tapasya in this age is to, you know, try to cooperate, try to tolerate each other. That is the biggest tapasya in this age of Kali. We don't like to tolerate others. We hope that if I can live in a place where either I'm alone or surrounded by those who accept what I say. My way or highway. Either I go to highway or you go to highway. But don't contradict what I want to do. So therefore the tapasya of a devotee, along with consciously trying to avoid, Prabhupada said the tapasya for devotees is these four regulative principles. No meditating, no gambling, no illicit sex, no intoxication. And when we engage in devotional service, when genuinely we try to serve, like since today's Maharaj's appearance day, I can tell one incident. No, somebody asked him that, why you are so engaged in preaching? He said, I'm not a scholar. I can't quote big, you know, shastra from here, there, everywhere. He said three things. Krishnandru had asked this question. How do you solve people's problem? He said three things. He said, complete faith in the books of Srila Prabhupada. You know, taking shelter of Srila Prabhupada's books. That is the first thing. And second is performing your personal sadhana in the association of devotees. For a practicing devotee, you know, practicing one's sadhana in the association of devotees is very important. And that, taking that shelter, the association of devotees. Therefore, we see, you know, every day coming and chanting Hare Krishna with other devotees. That's so important. And third, he said that some other Krishna has awarded me the genuine concern for others. So these three things make me help others. And then because you are helping others genuinely, you don't have time for eating. You don't have time for sleeping. You don't have time for your bodily necessities. Then you don't consciously perform tapasya. I don't want to eat this. I don't want to wear best clothes. I don't want to do this. It becomes a byproduct of trying to help devotees in a genuine way. When that is done, when you appreciate devotees, the nature of appreciation, sometime I've actually heard from seniors, some devotees, he said, never glorify your subordinates. If you glorify your subordinate, then they will get false ego. But that is wrong. Appreciation does not increase one's false ego. Appreciation, what does it do? It increases humility. When a genuine practicing devotee is appreciated by the senior for the service which he renders, it creates an overwhelming situation. The consciousness becomes, you know, the devotee one who is praised or appreciated becomes very grateful. And then in turn he says that actually I don't have these qualities. In the fourth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Maharaj Prutu was glorified by his own subject. And what did he say? He didn't become flattered. He said, actually I don't have these qualities. You are trying to tell me what I should do. Like one sannyasi from the Madhva Sampradaya, they were glorifying him for his 60th sannyas. They glorified many things. After the ceremony was over, all the glorification was over, he said, actually you are so refined gentleman. You know, rather than telling me I am supposed to do all these things, you are saying I am already done it. But you are warning me that I am supposed to act in this way, even though I am not acting like that. So I will try to act as you are desiring. You are talking, I have this quality, I have that quality. I don't have these qualities. To become a good sadhu, I need to have these qualities. So rather than saying that you have to practice this quality, you are saying that I am already practicing this quality. So I will try hard to practice these qualities. So therefore the appreciation does not increase one's false ego. Rather, appreciation increases the humility of other party, and that appreciation of a devotee, what does it do? It gives Krishna's attention towards us. Like in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, when Lord Chaitanya came to the house of Advaita Acharya, he took sannyas. Nityananda Prabhu as usually tricked Lord Chaitanya. He brought him to Advaita Acharya's house. And Advaita Acharya had cooked unlimited feast. And when Mahaprabhu, after that bhoga was offered to Lord Krishna, when he saw all the prasad, by seeing that, what did Lord Gauranga say? He said, anyone who has cooked this food, I take their dust eternally on my head. That is Lord Chaitanya. When you welcome Lord Chaitanya, yesterday we were discussing, when you welcome Lord Chaitanya in your house, he is the only one person. He comes not to monitor your life like a police cop. Mahaprabhu comes there to see even the small service you render, and he appreciates you unlimitedly. The nature of Lord Chaitanya was he would glorify his devotee as if he had five mouths. That was the nature of Lord Gauranga. He comes and he sees some prasadam being cooked, offered to Krishna. It's not a tangible service from a material point of view. But Mahaprabhu is saying that I will take the dust of Sita Thakurini on my head eternally. In the Srimad Bhagavatam we are discussing, many devotees are doing wonderful service, great service in International Society for Krishna Consciousness. But nobody is there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. But Govinda Dasi, Srila Prabhupada's disciple, I think in the fourth canto, right? In the fourth canto, Prabhupada writes about her taking care of Tulsi. Now, what is taking care of Tulsi? From a material point of view, from an organizational point of view, it's not a big deal. Just taking care of Tulsi, anybody can do it. But we see that she comes in the purport of Srimad Bhagavatam, and for the next 10,000 years, she will be there. And many big and many small devotees will come and go. Some will remember, some will not remember. But she will be remembered. Anybody reads the Bhagavatam and people will read for next 10,000 years. Her name is there. And Srila Prabhupada is glorifying that. And therefore we see that was the nature of a pure devotee. And Prabhupada's whole lifetime was a tapasya. Lifetime in preparation. Not passionately coming out and establishing himself. Lifetime in preparation, and when he came out, he really did wonderful. Hundreds of people became devotees. I conclude with a small, very nice, revealing story. Yesterday there was a DT welcoming function in Mira Road, and I was preparing my lecture, and I was looking in folio, and I found very interesting thing. There is a devotee in Detroit. I'll try to create more excitement. There is one devotee in Detroit. And it's a big temple purchased by Ambarish Prabhu and another, what's her name? Lakeshwanti Mataji. They purchased that property and they made into a temple. Prabhupada came there, installed Radha Kunji Bihari, Gaur Nitai, Jagannath Baldev Subhadra. And there is a devotee he worships every day. There is a head pujari and there is another devotee. Every day dresses Gaur Nitai. Every day in, day out, he offers bhoga to the Lord. And then, you know, this devotee is quite peculiar. When I saw him offering worship to the Lord, there was some kind of, you know, this smartha mentality. You know, how this is. But he said, no, he's worshipping for many years, he's doing this service, I should appreciate. And then yesterday I was reading, Prabhupada writes, Pustak Krishna Maharaj, he raised the question, because Srila Prabhupada was installing deities everywhere, even though there are not many devotees. And one place in Melbourne, he installed the deities and called Melbourne Mahaprabhu Mandir. And then he came to Detroit. He came to Detroit, and in one morning walk, Pustak Krishna Maharaj said, Prabhupada, you know, we have very less brahmanas. He was talking about one place. Only two brahmanas are there. Prabhupada said, it doesn't matter. As long as Gaur Nitai and Jagannath are there, even half brahmana will do. Adha brahmana will do. He said, what to speak of half brahmana, even one hand will do. Only one hand will do. If you don't have two hands, even one hand will do. And what is the speciality of this devotee? In Detroit. This Prabhupada spoke in Detroit in 1974. And the speciality of this devotee is that he only has left hand. He has a polio and he holds the bell here and he offers aarti to the Lord like this with a left hand. Now any smartha, if he sees this, he will say, what is this? But see, Prabhupada had predicted in 1974. It was not simply a statement. Yes, it was a statement to prove the greatness of Lord Gauranga, Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda and Jagannath Baldev Subhadra. Even one hand will sufficient. The Smriti Shastras, you know, the Smartha Shastras, they're very careful. If you have a fever, little beyond the normal, you know, temperature, you cannot go to the altar. You cannot worship because your body is contaminated. If you are not a full person, you cannot worship. But here Lord Chaitanya is so merciful. You know, Prabhupada said, even one hand will do. And this devotee has one hand. And now, you know, when I go, if I go and see this devotee worshipping, I appreciate it because every day in, day out, there are not 1,000 devotees coming and seeing how he worships the Lord. Hardly anybody is there. When we went to see, he was alone worshipping Gaur Nitai, offering aarti to everyone, holding the bell here, only this much is there, and some of the ringing the bell and offering the aarti from the left hand. And more interestingly, if I can remember rightly, I asked him, Every day he dresses Gaur Nitai. He dresses Gaur Nitai and they were dressed so beautifully. Sometimes when we are dressing, even two hands are not sufficient. We call the devotee who is dressing Radharani. Hold the pagadi here, hold the pagadi there. Use both of your hands so I can tie it properly. Even two hands are not sufficient. But this devotee is dressing with one hand. That is the power of the words of a pure devotee. One hand will do. And is proving it. And this happened in Detroit. Srila Prabhupada ki. Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Hare Krishna. We were mentioning in your class about this austerity. And then cooperation part. And then also that simplicity part came out. Like you gave the example of Govinda Dasi. How she's mentioned by Prabhupada. And also this devotee who is doing aarti and dressing of Gaur Nitai. So I was thinking this is understood very well that one has to cultivate these qualities. But I've heard a quotation that is attributed to His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj. He says that many times we can tolerate anything, you know, devotees might not be competent, they might not have skills, all this. But one thing we should consciously avoid always in a community is politics. And that threatens cooperation and that destroys. So I was thinking if, because I don't know exactly what we mean by this word, you know, politics and how it applies to community. And I wanted to know what is it that I can do or I should not do, which will ensure that, you know, this thing is not there. Because this is very, very, it's supposed to be a very serious thing. So I wanted to know what is it that we should avoid, which will ensure that there is no politics in Vaishnava society.
In the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, first verse, if you read, Krishna elaborates on the divine qualities. And very interestingly, I felt like that when he talks about Swadhyaya Tapa. And the next point is Arjavam and then Ahimsa. Most of the time, those who study scriptures, many times actually, or study any books, eventually, you know, you become simply a bookworm. You don't want to do any service. And then you think, oh, service is, I'm Brahman, it is meant for Shudras. That bodily activities, you avoid, oh, I can't do this, I'm intellectual person, and I can't do physical labor. So therefore, Swadhyaya and then Tapasya is there. When we perform Tapasya and study Shastra, study of Shastra, the nature of study of Shastra, you know, if it is not used for devotional service, it makes our intelligence very complicated. Analyzing everything, analyzing Krishna, analyzing spiritual master, analyzing devotional service. So therefore, Swadhyaya Tapasya and Arjavam, simplicity. Next item Krishna mentions is the simplicity. And then Ahimsa. So when there is Tapasya, you know, Ravan and Hiranyakashipu are not at all simple. Very complicated. And they were not non-violent, but aggressively violent. So therefore, we have to decide and check ourselves. I remember when I was serving Maharaj for many years, you know, at one point of time, he was giving me real chastisement, good chastisement. I asked him, Maharaj, all this year you never chastised me, why are you chastising now? He said, all this time you are simple, now you are becoming complicated. You know, you become intelligent by the grace of your spiritual master. You understand what is devotional service by his grace. And then you start judging with that intelligence, his grace only. Like Prabhupada talked about one of his devotee. And he became so intelligent and he came, Prabhupada, can you give me blessings so that I can go to the higher guru? Prabhupada said, yeah, I'll give the blessing that you'll go to hell. Not that Prabhupada wanted to send him to hell. Guru would not do that. But even if Krishna, even if Prabhupada would have told, okay, you go. But Krishna will not tolerate. He said, no, he may tell you, but I will not fulfill this desire. I will send you to hell only. So Prabhupada is simply saying what Krishna will do with him. So therefore, consciously analyzing, when we are too much with the outside world, when our senses are interacting too much with the outside world, we see devotional service from a very superficial point of view. Therefore, devotee also have to have a time to reflect and analyze. Okay, I am doing tapasya, but where that tapasya is leading? Am I hurting devotees? Am I becoming complicated in my behavior? You know, am I taking the blessings of devotees for whatever I do? When we don't take blessings, any endeavor we undertake, that is again the sign of being complicated, hurting others. So therefore, consciously, not that we become psychologically wrecked, we go mad all the time contemplating and not doing anything. Everything has to be done measured. You know, you do your devotional service, I do my devotional service, and there has to be some time. Because all the time thinking, you know, what am I doing, then you'll see that you're full of faults. And that is true. And because the faults are unlimited, then you feel hopelessness. Burijan Prabhu said it very nicely. He said, you should also see where you are going. You should see where you are going. When you see where you are going, the path is still too long. Limitless. Thousands of miles far away. Then you may feel hopeless. Kahan ja raha main? Where am I going? It's a limitless. Then if you only see the future path, you'll feel hopeless. But you should turn back also. Why you should turn back? To see how much you have traveled. So these two things, how much more I have to travel and how much I have traveled, they keep the balance. How much you have traveled, what does it do? It gives the confidence. If I have done this much, I can also do the future travel also. I have the ability. Krishna will empower me. But if you only see behind, then you'll bump into somebody. There'll be an accident. But if you only see in the front, abhi kitna jana hai, aur kitna travel karna hai, then you become hopeless. And that is the path. Bhakti is so scientific. You know, these combined efforts. Not only being seeing our faults, because only faults, I'm inferior, I'm good for nothing, and actually become good for nothing. We lose hope in Krishna's empowerment. We lose hope in Krishna's potency. Like Bhakti Vaibhav Maharaj explained, it's a great story. He didn't know English, he wrote a letter to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, read my books. And he wrote, so Prabhupada, but your books are not in our language. He said, read my books. That was the instruction. Now you could have said, how will I read? I am so fallen, I cannot fulfill my guru's order, I am so fallen, I can't read English, I am only German. He could have gone into that mental trip and never ever tried. What he did was, he took a dictionary, English dictionary, and his German dictionary and English, Prabhupada's books. For one page to read, because that was the instruction, you can imagine, you don't know anything, you may read but you don't know what is the meaning. It would take such a long time to read one page of Srila Prabhupada's book. It became so difficult. And eventually, because he followed, he had the faith in Prabhupada's words. Eventually, either in Cambridge or Harvard, he gave a talk in English to the students of philosophy in English language. The person was not able to read anything, no, understand the English language, speak English language. Eventually, he could speak in Harvard or Cambridge, not any college in, you know, some village. But these top colleges, he said he could speak. So therefore, that combined effort, feeling inferior, but at the same time having the faith in the power of Guru and Krishna. Rup Goswami offered those prayers. He said, when we see ourselves, there is no hope. We are like dwarf trying to catch the moon. A dwarf can never catch the moon. But if the dwarf has Vamandev with him, what to speak of catching moon? He can catch entire universe. So Rupa Goswami said, because we have come in contact with you, heard about your mercy, then there is this hope that we'll attain your mercy. So this combined, when we are too superficial, we become proud. When we are too introvert, we become hopeless. We lose our confidence. Therefore, bhakti is so scientific that we have to be combining these two. We have to see, study of Shastra, is it making me complicated? It is not that I stop studying Shastra so that I can become less complicated. Rather, I continue studying Shastra but try to be, you know, less complicated. Is it that I'm becoming, you know, violent towards other devotees, you know, in my words, like we were discussing, and openly in this class we request all the devotees, you know, sometime when we don't focus and consciously work on it, in the ashram, we are exposing our faults, and we hope all the devotees help us, that sometime we fall into the trap of loose talks, addressing each other in a very, very filthy, not filthy from a material point of view, but filthy from the devotional culture point of view. You know, calling each other, you know, something which is not mentioned in the scripture. Prabhu word doesn't come only. Or speaking, you know, I don't want to mention to, you know, make the same mistake which we are making. So we want to, you know, avoid that. Another small story. One time I was sitting with Maharaj and then I was saying something to him. And he was saying, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then he started saying something to me. And I was saying, yeah, yeah. And Maharaj said, you know what? He said, this word, yeah, is not very civilized. He also said, I also said, he said, well, let us help each other. Whenever I say, yeah, you stop me and say, no, Maharaj, yes. And when you say, yeah, I will say, yes. He said, we have to say, yes, not yeah. Let us help each other. That is how a devotee feels, that I have this difficulty, you have this difficulty, let us help each other. So sometimes it happens. Because our intimacy, again we have this concept, intimacy means as physical as possible. It is not intimacy. Intimacy means, you know, you maintain that respect, then that increases real confidence in each other. And the language, the body language, the way we interact with devotees, when if somebody is senior, clapping on each other, we do it. It's a bad thing to clap on each other's hand. It is not civilized. It is not Brahminical. Or patting on somebody's back who is senior to us. Younger, small children, we can do it. But, you know, doing to somebody is senior to us. It is not very civilized. And then, you know, in the temple, so easily we fall into these bad habits. I saw, you know, one devotee, not devotee, outside devotee, but not ISKCON devotee, came to the temple and then she had a mobile and mobile rang and immediately she ran out. Not to give attention to taking the call, I was observing. Brahmachari should not see what I saw. And she ran out and she switched off her mobile. She didn't take the mobile and she came out to take, she came inside to take darshan. Now she doesn't know the principle of Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. She has not read. But the common sense. When you come to the temple, you are not supposed to talk. You are not supposed to converse with somebody else. Krishna is here. You know, you have come to see Krishna. Why to converse? She just switched off. She took darshan. She went out. And we read Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. We appeared for Bhakti Shastri exam. We get 90, 91, 93, 94, 95. We are worried about not getting less than 95. And 64 items, you know, we memorize it. We can write all the 64 items. But actually when we have to implement that, we start, you know, it's like a fish market, talking all the time. During Guru Puja, during Tulsi Puja. So we request all the devotees, we will help each other. We should not talk in the temple. If there is anything emergency, important, take the devotee and go out, outside. Because talking in the presence of the Lord is disrespecting. It should not be made into a culture of, you know, some kind of auditorium. Krishna is standing there. We were discussing that when some very important person, what to speak of? Devotee, great devotee. Even if there is a police commissioner comes to the temple, we have seen, we become silent. He is not a devotee. But because he has such a big post, now the way we talk to him, it is very gentle. Speak very softly. But in Krishna, that means unconsciously or consciously, mostly unconsciously, we are trying to be devotees. We have sincere desire. But because some other the culture is lost, the Lord is standing. We have faith in the Lord. We believe Krishna is non-different from his deity. But some other because we don't remind each other all the time. You know, we talk. Rather than talking to Krishna, we talk to each other. Rather than talking about Krishna, we talk about something mundane subject matter. In this way, within the temple, rather than creating Krishna conscious atmosphere, while chanting Hare Krishna in the kirtan, while offering glorification to Srila Prabhupada, we keep talking. It is not a big offense, but still, Rupa Goswami does not recommend that. So therefore, on this very auspicious occasion, you know, all of us, I have the problem, and I know many of us, you know, at least in the Brahmacharya Ashram, we have this problem. And I can dare say this, many of you also have this problem. So let us help each other in avoiding this problem. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki, Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki.